And for me, because I had a broken leg and I said, I think my leg is broken, and they said, no, no, it's tendonitis. My disability is permanent and I can't run. Not that I want to, but I can't. I can't squat. I can't do a lot of things that at 39 years old I should be able to do. So lots of pros and lots of cons, but I wouldn't trade it for anything.
This is Culture at a Crossroads with David Mann.
With me in conversation, Canadian and American author Kelly Thompson. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
You are someone that has always wanted to be a writer, but having gone through the experience that you did of being a female in the military, how helpful was that for you to have something compelling to really launch that career?
You know, it's funny because it actually started out as fiction. I was doing my master's degree in creative writing and I was writing about women in the forces. So I put it in fiction because I thought that's what would make it palatable and interesting to people. So I think I always thought I would write fiction. I didn't think nonfiction would be where I would go. I think the older I get and the more I read, the more I realize I think a lot of beauty comes from true stories, a lot of learning, especially when it pushes you into self-reflection. There's nothing quite like sitting with someone else's story to expand your mind. So nonfiction came. So I don't know if it was so much waiting for a story to have as much as sometimes stories beg to be told.
Wow, that's pretty deep.
Off my head, no less.
You mentioned that this was a story that was begged to be told. Is there a particular piece of that that was sort of the straw that broke the camel's back for you of what needed to be told that they kind of like launched this whole thing?
I eventually, because it addresses a lot of sexual harassment in the military, I was talking to a former colleague of mine, a woman, and we were talking about being deployed with people who had assaulted or harassed us. So in particular, I remember we were on this flight and she was two rows away from a man who had, a fellow soldier who had broken into her apartment in the middle of the night. And the reprimands were not happening enough. There was not enough change. And we were asking women to deploy and to protect other people while also worrying about protecting themselves. It felt so odd to me. I also think we're in this time of a reckoning of wanting to change that dynamic. And I also think I wanted to write from the perspective of I still love this organization and believe in what it does. I always say I can't be a veteran. I can't be a fourth generation on both sides of my family. My husband's in the military. I can't be connected in so many ways and still not respect and admire why I think people join, which is because they want to help other people. But we need to do better at keeping those people safe while they're serving.
Yeah, let's dig into your story here. So you decide to join the military, but it's something that is seeped in your blood a little bit.
Definitely. 9/11 happened when I was in my last year of high school. So for your Ontario listeners who know about grade 13, I was the last year to do it. It happened when I was in my final year of high school. And I thought, what do we do now? And I think when you grow up in a military community, which I did, like I said, four generations, both sides, World War II veterans, Korean War, my dad was in the Golan Heights, and all of these men very deeply affected by their service. A lot of post-traumatic stress, a lot of drinking in my family. And I don't think I thought about it in terms of that at that time, but I think there was something about watching those towers crash down that made a lot of us go, the world is so much bigger than just me. And we don't think a lot about that when we're 18, you know, or usually not thinking on a global scale about other people. And so I was always honest in the book. I really wanted an education. So I did the ROTP program and I was also really scared. I think sometimes we're, you know, in a world that really respects bravery, it's okay to also be really scared at the same time. And I was definitely scared.
You open this book, speaking of fear, but also there's this bravery component, sharing in Girls Need Not Apply about being at your grandfather's funeral and walking by the gravestone and sort of asking him to wish you luck. You said you come from a military family, but you'd come from generations of bravery.
I think so. And also, my grandpa was someone, I mean, he died relatively young, like in his late 60s, but we were really close. And he was a really big proponent of women doing anything that they wanted to do. So I remember, I used to think he was quite, you know, old fashioned in that way. And my dad said, no, he would have loved this. He would have loved you signing up. My grandpa, who was a World War II veteran, only just died 6 months ago, actually.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. He was quite the guy at 99. And he was never one to get emotional. But I remember when I joined, he came to my enrollment and he said, I'm proud of you. And that was this monumental moment where I thought, maybe this is a direction that's about something other than me. And that's a great thing to give to people in need, to think about people other than yourself.
Let's delve into that other-centered component of serving in the military. How has this continued to shape your appreciation for this field?
What a beautiful question. Well, like I said, I think part of it is also really, I'm allowed to be upset by people who hurt me or touched me without my consent or made all these crude and crass comments, but I worked with so many wonderful men and women, so many who I still keep in touch with, so many who really believe in that service to other people. And I see it in my husband every day when he puts his uniform on and he cares about the people who work for him. It has also influenced how I approach my creative work now. You know, I have a history of writing about really hard subjects, grief and sexual assault and abuse and addiction. I write about those things because I always think about the person who's on the other end who needs that book or who needs to feel seen on the page or needs to know that they're not alone. And I often think that really reflected in my military service too. I really craved to know that other people were also scared or that other people were feeling uncomfortable, because suddenly when we use our voices and we speak out loud, that's how change happens. So it's been a really great influence.
You begin this book by sort of sharing how it was quite a surprise to you what being even in this training atmosphere entailed, from the regimented early morning wake-up call to the fitness tests. Could you give us, my listeners, just a bit of a glimpse into that life?
David, I don't miss it. And I tell you, when, like, I am really willing to admit I'm not the strongest person on the block, and this body is not made for running. I say it's made for naps and snacks. So perhaps this ought to have been the warning, but it really was quite similar to movies that I saw. I mean, we were scrubbing floors with a toothbrush. We were, we were carrying, you know, we would carry like big poles as we ran, like telephone length poles to run. So much running. Rucksack marches, usually, you know, the longest one is 13 kilometers, and then you dig a shell scrape, and then you have to carry one of your friends for 100 meters, I believe it was. But all of this, you know, you're not wearing comfortable shoes. You're wearing hard leather combat boots, and you're trying to keep this pace that is super unnatural most of the time. The pace is sort of, at the time, was a bit designed to really push you to limits. And while I'm sometimes angry about those limits, because it has resulted in a permanent disability for me, because we're trained to ignore them, you know, you ignore them and you keep sort of soldiering on. But yeah, definitely. I mean, the PT, the physical training happens at 5 a.m. You're almost always way too hot because it's the middle of Quebec and in the middle of, it's always a heat wave. There's always a heat wave. So many push-ups. So very many push-ups in between breaks, marching everywhere. It's just constant physical attention. And also because mentally, you're not just on a run. You're on a run and you're staying in ranks and you're keeping up with this person and you have to go in line with this person. There's like this whole mental element to it as well that is extra tiring.
And that is a lot of what has made people in the military so disciplined. There's that mental component. They have to stay in this such a regimented posture. What are some of the positives of that? What are some of the negatives of that?
A lot of positives. Like I said, I've really learned in the arts world now, I'm very much considered hyper-organized by most folks. I think I kind of blow their minds with, I will, you know, there are spreadsheets, there is much organization that, and I have loved taking that with me. It's also, I'm in a business of tenacity. You know, the difference between me being published and someone else isn't talent, because there's an audience for everything. It's tenacity. I will not give up. And the military taught me that. I think as much as the physicality of it, like I said, really taught me what I was made of. It taught me what I was willing to do when it was in service of someone else and not just myself. And it also taught me that I have to listen to my body, because the negatives are definitely, we created a culture in the forces of not speaking up when you are mentally or physically wounded. And the result of that is people like my dad, who, you know, 35 years later, 40 years later, are still dealing with the ramifications of the things they've had to see. And for me, because I had a broken leg and I said, I think my leg is broken. And they said, no, no, it's tendonitis. My disability is permanent and I can't run. Not that I want to, but I can't. I can't squat. I can't do a lot of things that at 39 years old, I should be able to do. So lots of pros and lots of cons, but I wouldn't trade it for anything.
You face sexism and you probably figured you might face some of this going in, but would you say it was worse than you expected?
Yes. What's funny is I don't think I actually expected it. You know, I was very much brought up in this family, like women do anything, women can do anything. And I of course, I believe it, but at what cost to myself? So I was very much raised in a family where you respect authority and you really respect age and wisdom. And I still do, but I learned, and the military really thrives on rank culture, controlling who says and does what. You know, I think in particular when I had a master corporal on my course who was in control of me passing and failing this course, someone accused him of sexual harassment. And he asked me if I would write a letter that would say, oh, he would never do that, basically. Mm-hmm. Now, like, what am I supposed to do? You know, I don't know this guy from a hill of beans. Now, he didn't harass me other than call me fat all the time and tell me I was eating too much bacon. But I could giggle at that. Because I wasn't. I was losing weight to the point it was almost obscene. But that structure, that power structure of asking me, an officer cadet, to write this letter of support, or just endlessly in my career, you know, being bent over the table at the Christmas party and spanked, they wouldn't be doing that to someone else of a higher rank or of someone who they didn't feel like they could control because of my gender. And I took it because it felt like my only way in, because I'm very girly. You know, I was fit, but I'm not like the push-up queen. I'm not heavy lifting stuff. It felt like my only way to be accepted is if I let my body be part of that commentary.
I'm so sorry. You do talk about in the book, there are some other females, but among your roommates, you don't really have a strong connection with any of them in particular. So is that contributing to this too? It's a sense of belonging?
100%. You know, I had a really great interview once. I was writing an article and I was talking with Sandra Perron, who was our first female infantry officer. And she wrote a book called Outstanding in the Field. And we were talking about harassment, and she wrote in particular about being sexually assaulted in training. And we were saying how you didn't want to be associated with other women because women were weak. And you didn't want to be associated with weakness. Not only did you not want to, you couldn't afford to. Not if you wanted to be taken seriously. So at least Sandra Perron was really fit. You know, she could keep up, whereas I couldn't keep up. So it wasn't until a little later in my career where I was the top student on all my training and all my courses where I could say, look, at least I'm good at my job, you know. But you didn't want to be associated with weakness. And therefore, a lot of women really distanced themselves from me, which was fair at the time I understand it, but there's this competition that builds that makes us antagonistic for one another, which is sad to me. But I think that's changing a lot.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot that's come out on the Canadian military in the last 5 years. Where would you say we are today on this particular sexism topic?
I mean, it's never fast enough for people who are still struggling and suffering. I'm very aware that we've just had, you know, the big lawsuit. The payouts for the lawsuit have sort of just happened, which was all the people suing for the harassment that they, it was like a class action. But we've had all these apologies and we've had all these big reports that are done, and the change is not happening fast enough for a lot of people. But at the same time, this is a culture that has been cultivated to present a certain kind of bravado for a very long time. And sometimes that change is slower than we'd like. But I look at the difference from 10 years ago when I was into now, and it is just night and day. And I see it because I'm seeing my husband in it and I'm meeting people who are currently serving. You know, when I was writing this sort of girly blog for Chatelaine for about a year, my last year in the forces, things about, you know, what the uniform felt like and looked like and going to mess dinners, like light stuff. And I got hauled in off leave and asked if I was willing to risk my career and write a memo to assume all risk and this and that. And then 10 years later, the book came out. And I have been invited to almost every base, like all across Canada, to come talk about how we can change it together. Next month, I'm giving a presentation to the organization that's been stood up for culture change, giving a big presentation with some amazing lawyers and some different sorts of experts so that we can move towards that. That wasn't happening when I was in. I wasn't seeing those conversations being had publicly. So I see it as a huge win, which is why I still believe in it today.
Behind closed doors, you see someone's character. You saw your husband's character when he was tested, when he was tried. How much of someone's character do we not get to see being in the army, really, from the public's perspective?
Oh, what a great question. I was just talking about this the other day, actually, because we had like a work party for my husband's troops. And one of the guys said, you know, it feels like your husband is the exact same guy at work as he is at home. And that's really rare, don't you think? And I thought about it and I went, yeah, it is really rare. But we're both those people. And I think this is why too much of military life has been sort of shrouded in this, because we're usually focused on events, not necessarily on people, because we're fighting wars, or we're peacekeeping, or we're helping in emergency disasters. But I think that's the thing, is remembering that on the other side, there is tenderness and family and fears and mental health and injuries, all these things that make us human. And that's why talking about it feels so important to me. So yeah, we definitely see, you know, a lot of us are really different at work. We have sort of our professional selves. The irony is not lost on me that now I make this living being like, here I am in all my ugly parts, you know, and there are many. I think it's a beautiful thing to talk about those.
Kelly, as I mentioned, a lot of my audience have an element of faith, and there's some interesting parallels to things that you've been chatting about in this conversation. One of them being, the power structure. There's different dynamics, and you got to serve at one point as a female captain. I'm wondering, did you ever have the opportunity to really bridge that barrier with someone who is a lower rank than you, which you said earlier, like you mentioned about that gentleman who kind of abused his authority. Were you ever able to kind of flip that around?
I don't think so. I think a really big problem for me was because I was injured for such a long time, it took me a long time to get to captain, which isn't normal. Normally it takes 3 years. And for me, it was about 5 or 6. Because I was injured, I couldn't officially be promoted. So I was almost in this constant state of not quite stepping into my own self as a leader. I think that's only come since I left, which is a shame, both in terms of I should have been mentored enough to feel safe to make decisions, to make mistakes without them feeling so high stakes all the time. But I think most of my leadership has come since I've left, people who email me since then, having these conversations, giving the lectures, participating in those discussions. No, I don't think I did. I don't think I really embraced the leadership role in the way that I hoped I should have.
I appreciate your vulnerability so much. This dynamic of being others-centered, we might say you're kind of like the Apostle Paul writing from prison. Your platform has grown. It's blossomed. How would you say that going through your experience has given you a greater sense of empathy for others just in your life and in general?
Oh, hugely. Especially in writing about it, because you have to look at people as characters. And as a writer, when I look at people as characters, I think about all their good and all their bad and all the beauty in between. I think there's this idea to, you know, with your whole podcast about culture, there's this idea that we can't say things anymore or we can't make mistakes. I think we should make mistakes and we should be open and honest about them and be willing to grow and learn from them. The wonderful people I worked with in the military who were open to hearing if they'd hurt someone's feelings, and then, you know, everyone does and dusted and off we move on, instead of it having to always be these big, huge, heavy topics. I think a lot about Brené Brown, and she always says that people are just doing their best. And I think about this a lot. A lot of people that I worked with were also just doing their best. And sometimes you're doing your best within a system that's operated in the same way for a very long time, and we don't know any better. And sometimes even when we want to be better. So, oh, my empathy, and especially, I think, you know, in the memoir, I own a lot of my mistakes in my second memoir, you know, talking about my sister and addiction. And I'm really open and honest. I was a really ugly person because I was angry. And so what if I had the opportunity to grow and learn? None of us want to be judged based on all the bad things we did when we were in our early 20s, because we were all doing them. You know, we want to be measured by who we are today. So I want to be measured as someone who's trying to grow and learn and develop to be a better person for myself and within my community.
That's beautiful. And that's, I think, a great place to end on. We've been in conversation with Kelly Thompson. She's an author, and we've been chatting specifically about her book, Girls Need Not Apply, kellythompson.com. And it's been a privilege to chat with someone else who's spent some time in Barrie, Ontario. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Well, a good reminder in empathy, it means to enter into someone else's situation. I find this amazing for someone who's incurred physical and mental harassment from the military, and yet she's able to step back and understand why it could be this way and still even have respect for this institution. Jesus always entered in before he ministered, as he ministered. A good reminder for us too, as we face complex situations every single day. Thanks for listening today. A reminder that you can access any of our episodes when you head to the Culture at a Crossroads podcast. We do invite you back next week as we once again explore the intersection of faith and culture in Canada, helping to better equip you in following Jesus.